Thank you very much, and it is for me a great pleasure to be here. This is my first meeting of the Lin Che that I have been able to attend as a member, and it's for me a great honor to be here under the gavel of Professor Pasinetti to reflect on the work of my thesis chairman, Sidney Winter, and of my friend and professor, Richard Nelson. And since I am also, by now, a past president of the Association for Evolutionary Economics, the phrase that comes to mind is harmonic convergence. The Nelson-Winter paradigm of evolutionary growth models is, it seems to me, a bridge between mainstream equilibrium growth theory. Dick Nelson's paper this morning, I think, drew that out quite carefully, and what you might call Darwinian materialism. My encounter with these ideas, which came first when they were being drafted in the late 1970s, came after a year under Pasinetti, Kaldor, and Goodwin, and they precipitated me back to Schumpeter and back especially to that great essay of Thorstein Veblen on why is economics not an evolutionary science. It's an essay that Sid quoted yesterday, and which contains my favorite sentence in the entire canon of our subject. Veblen wrote, "If we are getting restless under the taxonomy of a monocotyledonous wage doctrine and a cryptogamic theory of interest, with involute loculicidal tomentous and maniliform variants, what is the cytoplasm, centrosome, or karyokinetic process to which we may turn and in which we may find surcease from the metaphysics of normality and controlling principles?" The weight of that sentence on my mind is very great. It's been so for many years. And I realized as I transcribed it yesterday that I must have had it in my subconscious when I chose the title of my newest book, which is The End of Normal. Surcease from the metaphysics of normality and controlling principles. What indeed? The emphasis, very much present in the four papers that we've heard today, on innovation is of course not misplaced. But Veblen, like Schumpeter, saw the essence of economic evolution in technology, what he called the sequence of change in the methods of doing things. And Schumpeter drew out, I think, an important aspect of this change in its most important manifestations when he wrote, I think it's in a footnote in the Theory of Economic Development, "Add successively as many mail coaches as you please, you will never get a railway thereby." How do you get a railway? Not only by increments and adaptation and continuous processes, but mainly by combination and recombination, transmutation of energy sources and powertrains and materials. Technological change happens when these combinations and recombinations become possible. Start with a wagon drawn by a horse, make the wheels to some rails, replace the horse with a steam engine, change the materials from wood to metal, replace the steam engine with a diesel engine, ultimately with an electrical motor of a very large scale, and what was originally driven effectively by sunshine and grass is ultimately driven by nuclear fission. These are matters of metallurgy, chemistry, energy management, mechanical structure, information flow, and storage. There is combination, incremental improvement, and then yet another recombination. Where does the process of selection come in? An important aspect of this is what we call crisis. It's driven by changing cost of resources in the face of a system which has acquired certain fixed characteristics. This is something to which Michael Landesman's paper made reference in its passing reference to Georgescu Rogan. As a general biophysical principle, larger scale and greater fixed cost are necessary for efficiency. That railroad run by nuclear power is part of a large network of power generation. But such systems are also more fragile. They are more vulnerable to change as either the general climate or the cost of resources change as time goes by, as they age, and as they become less well adapted to the underlying situation. This is why the dinosaurs and the dodos disappeared. It's why the Soviet Union collapsed. It's why railways tend to go bankrupt. It's why in the great crises of the last few decades in much of the third world, public water systems collapsed and were largely replaced by the private provision of drinking water in bottles, a much more costly and less efficient way of doing things. But under stress, stress favors the flexible. Or as Jonathan Schell wrote of the ultimate climate change, that is to say, of the consequences of nuclear war, it would be followed by a republic of insects and grass. The present crisis has a technical aftermath, and that came up very pungently in the remark of Mario Pianta to the effect that the southern European countries have lost a quarter of their industrial structure in the crisis. Absent a major reduction in the cost of resources, what will replace that structure will not be more efficient than what has been eliminated. And what that suggests as a general rule in these situations is that large economic structures come under great stress in periods of constrained resource costs and economic crisis. The large economic structure that is at risk right now is, of course, the European Union. It's not the first, and it may not be the last to come under this kind of stress. The direction I would therefore take evolutionary economics and its implicit political dimension starts, or would start, from the old institutionalism, firmly rooted in Veblen, and Commons, and Clarence Ayres, with its clear distinction between industrial and ceremonial behavior, its aversion to teleology, to optimism, and to notions of equilibrium, and its integration of economic systems with the technological, geophysical, and biophysical world operating and unfolding in calendar time. This is something to which, of course, many scholars associated with this institution have been making contributions for many years. One might say to evoke in closing a familiar characterization that this is neither saltwater nor freshwater economics. Both saltwater and freshwater are comparatively sterile. What we have here is perhaps backwater economics, but as any biologist will tell you, it's in the backwater that evolution actually occurs. Thank you very much.